Welcome to the Bridging the Gap podcast, where our mission is to encourage, equip, and empower every woman on her faith journey with Jesus Christ. Today, we are honored to hear a workshop recording from the 2024 BTG Leadership Conference as our podcast host, McKelty Bloom, facilitated a live panel with the former BTG director, Carol Lund, Pastor Christy Kerr, and BTG advisor and corporate leader, Dolores Smith. In this episode, the panelists discuss the topic of giving feedback and having difficult conversations with peers and those you lead. You'll hear practical advice, preparation strategies, and about the necessity of prayer leading up to these conversations. You'll hear from experience in the ministry and marketplace worlds and gain insight into how to not take unkind comments personally. We hope you enjoy this podcast. Good, good, good. Well, we're so excited to have you here today. And this morning, we're going to be talking about having hard conversations, giving feedback, and that might not be great feedback in the workplace and in ministry, wherever you're walking through. And I'm excited to learn because this is not a strong suit in my life. So I was like, sign me up. I'll lead the panel so I can sit and learn as I go. So I'm really excited to spend the first half talking with these ladies, asking them questions, picking their brains on some more of like the generic concepts with it. But then what we're going to do is open it up for you guys to ask some questions. So in a little bit here, there's going to be some paper and pens that'll be passed out. And just write any scenarios or questions that you might have in regards to how maybe to have harder conversations in leadership. And if there's a scenario that you have that you want us to go through, write those down. And I will try to get through as many as I can. I can't promise anything, but we'll try to spend the last half going through those. And so that will be here in a little bit. But I want to introduce my incredible panel. It is truly an honor to just sit with these women. I mean, they're all my friends and they're all just great mentors and leaders in life. But Carol Lund, Christy Kerr, Dolores Smith, can you just give them a hand, please, as we're just welcoming them today. But all of you women have so much knowledge in just the variety of leadership roles that you have had and working in both marketplace, in the business professional world, also in ministry, also in family and friendships and church world. So I just can't wait to sit and pick your brain and hear all of this. So let's just dive in. If you want to start, first off, just kind of briefly introducing yourself and maybe where in the sphere of leadership you have been in, and then we'll go from there. Carol, do you want to start?
My name is Carol Lund, and I have past director of Bridging the Gap.
That's all she's going to say. She's got like so much leadership wisdom.
Decades.
Yes. My name's Christy Kerr. I'm currently pastoring Homestead Community Church in Farmington with my husband, Jeff, a church we planted almost 9 years ago. Before that, the last 5 years, I was chief of staff at North Central University working in the president's office. Mostly church work. And actually right now I'm doing a lot serving in our community in Farmington. So that's me. And Carol's my mentor. So her answers are going to be my answers. That'll be easy.
Life never stops. There isn't such a thing as retirement in the kingdom. I'm as busy now as I've ever been. Yes.
I ask me, what would Carol do? Is what I think all the time.
I am Dolores Smith. I'm a learning and development manager. So I've been in corporate America my entire career. I've done a lot of volunteer. My dad was an Assemblies of God pastor. So I most definitely have led and done a lot of things within churches.
And being such an incredible leader within Bridging the Gap, too. And she ran the after party. I mean, that was a huge thing. So don't discount that.
I just do what I'm told. Carol recruited me. I worked for her. She taught me good things. The things, all the things.
Well, to get us started, I would love for each of you just to share a little bit about when it comes to navigating hard conversations, when it comes to being the one to and have to initiate that in leadership or relaying feedback that might not be super positive, what emotions come up with that? And was that something that you were like, oh, I've got this. Yeah, that's super easy for me. Or did you have to grow in your comfortable feelings with that? Anybody can start.
I don't think it's easy for anybody, you know, difficult conversations, and it could be for various reasons that it can be challenging. We're actually going through a book right now with our staff at church that we've been reading called Difficult Conversations, and I love the way that they define it. They say in a conversation between somebody, you have the event itself that happened, like the thing that you got to talk about, like that's just facts, right? And then there's the emotion that comes along with it. So the facts are facts. But how many of you know there's some feelings associated with that, those events? But then the deeper level is identity. So why, when somebody does something or says something and you're like, I have a very large emotion, what is that hitting? Well, it's hitting on an identity. I felt like you're saying I'm not a good mom. I felt like you were attacking who I am, or your criticism of my work in that area made me feel like I'm not doing a good job. And now I feel like my identity is being questioned. So I think a lot of times the reason we avoid conversations is because this derails us, and all of a sudden the feelings overtake and the identity feels attacked. And suddenly something that isn't, that could be just kind of a conversation, feels like I'm now defending the very core of who I am. And so I think that, and for women especially, I think that we're so connected to all those parts of us that I think a lot of times that's why it's difficult for us to dive in.
You know, intimidation is a huge factor, and it comes in. And when you need to have a difficult conversation, don't overthink it. Overpray it. Yeah. And I guarantee you'll have a win-win. But I want to add this to this little piece. It never gets easy. It never is easy. It never gets easier. None of the above. You just have to walk it through with prayer.
I don't think I have very much to add to that. Yes, I would say the prayer piece, absolutely. But know that whoever you're talking to, keeping your audience in mind, everybody's different, and God made us wonderfully, uniquely different. And so making sure that you're not just going in there with your canned answer to go through and say, these are all the things, but take a pause and make sure it's an engaging conversation. When you're having a feedback conversation, it should never be condemning. It should always be uplifting and motivating. So if you do it well, it'll end up being motivating, not right away all the time, but eventually.
Dolores, did you feel like that was something that, because in your job, there's a lot of that you have to navigate. Did you feel, yeah, I know what I'm doing? Or was it a growing period for you?
Girlfriend, I messed that up. So I have done a workshop for Bridging the Gap. Yeah, talking about conflict resolution in a godly manner. And I joke that I say, hey, you can learn from all my mistakes because I have messed it up. I grew up in a family where my mom is German and my dad was full-blooded Mexican. And so we had to learn how to eat conflict for breakfast. But I messed it up a lot, like a lot. So I would say it was something that was learned, but it was something that took perseverance.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. So what were some maybe tools, strategies, or biblical perspectives that you utilized to your core and your foundation to help with these conversations?
I'm going to jump on this one really quick. I'm a highlighter and underliner. My Bible looks like a disaster. All my books look terrible. The first word is wait until the Father directs the time. Mm-hmm. Be prayed up. Approach must be non-threatening. Listen well, but here is the key. Do you truly love and care about the person that you need to have a difficult conversation with? And then I also added this, and I'm not sure if this fits in here or not, but have I earned the right to confront this person? Mm-hmm.
She just drops
them.
I will piggyback on that because I was actually going to use Carol as an example. I know she's uncomfortable with me singing her praises, but growing up, I feel like a lot of the leaders that I worked with were very authoritarian, and fear was always a tool in their toolbox. And maybe you've experienced that, whether it was in your home or your family, like, you know, if you were in trouble and confronted, it was always in anger, and it was always like, you've done something wrong, and it was like, or bosses that I worked for, like, if you don't change this, like, I'm your boss, I have the authority to fire you. And I remember early on in ministry, you know, having just a lot of fear involved in leadership, a lot of fear involved in letting people down and my people pleaser and things. And then I started working with this wonderful woman, Carol Lund. And I noticed something immediately about her. Fear was not in her toolbox. It wasn't something she ever utilized. And so when she just said, "Do you love the person that you're confronting?" I learned this from Carol, because we worked very closely together for years and years and years. And every time we had a difficult conversation, I was like so at ease, like, "Carol, what do I do?" Or, "Hey, should I do this differently?" It always was love, never fear, which makes you have to be a better leader, because fear is a good motivator.
Yeah.
And I know we know this as parents, right? Like maybe you grew up and discipline was always with fear. And now as a parent, you're trying to be restorative and motivating in your discipline and firm, but kind. And so this is a really good tool to learn, but it's something that I have learned in my, I've added to my leadership life of, no, I'm gonna be somebody that even if I have a difficult conversation, that I'm not going to use fear as a tool. And so what you said of like, it needs to be building up, it needs to be in love, it needs to be, you know, I love you, I care about you, I want the best for you, let's talk this through. And at no point in the middle do they feel like I'm going to remove my affection for them, I'm going to remove their place in my life. So having that, and again, being in love, but I'm just going to say, remove fear as a tool. When you're having a conversation with people, come at it with love.
And along with that word, that fear word, manipulation,
yes,
and control. Oh my goodness, we all want it, but we can't.
Yes.
We just can't.
Yeah.
I think the piece is Matthew 18. I think it lays it out what we should do. God does a very good job of making sure that it's very clear in the Bible about the process that we should be using. So utilizing that process, but also understanding that in the corporate America side of it, it's about making sure that we're setting the clear expectations, right? Has anybody ever been in a situation where they didn't understand what was really expected of them? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does it feel good? It's horrible, right? You don't know what you're shooting for, and you don't know what you're supposed to do. So making sure that you have those clear expectations. And I love what Carol said, because I tell people this all the time. Have you earned the right to give that person feedback? A lot of times we say, "Oh, assume positive intent." If you have to tell yourself that, step back. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. Because the worst thing you can do is try to give somebody feedback and then you weaponize it. And then you've just given them a horrible experience. So to step back, pray about it. If it's not your place, God will bring somebody else.
And is there any examples that you have maybe for those moments of, okay, let's say we're having to talk to somebody, we're in HR, we're a boss, we're anything, and we're mad at what this person did. Like we're having a lot of bitterness, or we're really frustrated, or what they did, they stole from the company, you know, something big or something crazy like that. And you're having to confront them and you don't like them. You know, there isn't a lot of love you're feeling inside. So, well, how do you get your mind right? And as you're walking into that meeting and knowing like, I have to be the one to do this. I can't pawn this off to somebody else. And what do you do to kind of get your mind right to still come at it without fear, without anger or manipulation? You're smiling. If you have an example, you can use it. But yes,
don't let the sun go down on your anger. That's the first one that comes up, because that's what I want to utilize to have the conversation right then and there, right?
Yeah.
Are you hearing me? I'm telling you that I'm not perfect. Sanctification is a process. But I will tell you that the thing that I bring myself to is I may not like that person. And if you just took my workshop, I was just very honest that there are people in this world I don't like, and very vulnerable. But guess what? God does. Mm-hmm. So I don't get to treat them the way that I would want to treat them. I get to treat them as God has asked me to treat them. And leadership is a great privilege and a great responsibility. And so with that being said, like, you just have to be very mindful of not just taking out what you want, but taking a moment to step back, understand that, ask yourself the questions, what rational, decent, kind person would try to do these things? Is it a lack of knowledge? Is it a lack of understanding? Or is it just not a good fit? So from corporate America standpoint, it's like trying to figure out the right resources at the right time, and are they set up for success? So a lot of stepping back, a lot of assessing the situation, and then approaching it appropriately.
What about from either of you where it's, yeah, in any of that?
I mean, I'm a big prayer. And I pray frequently, Lord, just put a guard over my mouth. I know that seems like, but honestly, like, don't let me say something that I shouldn't say. Like, and we are people of the Spirit. And you know when the Holy Spirit, the Lord really challenged me a few years ago on the area of self-control. Because it wasn't that I didn't hear the check in my spirit of like, don't say that. It was that I was like, I heard that. Let me say it anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Let me gossip anyway. Let me talk about that person that I haven't had a conversation with behind, you know. It wasn't that the Holy Spirit wasn't giving me that discernment. It was in the moment I didn't choose to practice the self-control of saying, now I'm going to follow that prompting. So I just pray like, okay, Lord, as I'm walking into this, I'm mad. Like, I'm frustrated. I don't trust my own discernment in this moment. This for me, this is another side note. I really rely on my husband when it comes to this. He is a far less reactionary human than I am. And so I really do listen to him. I will go to him and say, here are my big feelings. And he's like, you ready to take them out, huh? And I'm like, I'm ready to take them out. And he'll go, okay, let's take a second and let's just talk about this. And usually by the time I talk it through with him, I have a totally different approach that I'm going to do it. So again, you know, the Lord gives us people in our life. Maybe it's your spouse. Maybe it's your mom. Maybe it's your sister. Maybe it's a coworker that you know will help you de-escalate before you say something that you can't take back. Yeah. So, for me, I just trust the Holy Spirit and actually do what he says. So if you're in that moment and you start to say something and you're like, I feel like maybe I shouldn't say that. Don't say it. And then really rely on the people in your life that can give you some perspective before you just launch into something.
Good. Any thoughts, Carol? So we have conversations. Let's say we're having to have a difficult conversation with someone who we are friends with. You know, you're both pastors at this church. You know each other's family. You love each other. And it's a hard conversation and it goes south. And that identity gets hit. It feels personal, and they start to get personal against you. And has anyone experienced that before, where it gets all of a sudden real personal really fast? And you're like, what just happened? How do you, as the one that's trying to stay professional, the one that's trying to lead this meeting, this conversation well, one, how do you try to not take it personally? But if you do, what are things that you can do to let that go, to drop that, to not receive it, and to not put it on yourself?
You know, here's the bottom line. If we come with a pure heart and we speak the truth and it has gone south, like all the way, the bottom line is I can only control my behavior and my emotions. I cannot control the other person's response. And we forget that. We almost should put that up on, a sticky paper, put it all over the house. Like, really what Christy said, just don't take it personal, but it's so hard not to take it personal. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll share with this, and I'll try to make the story really short. This happened a few years ago, but I knew that I needed to confront this person because what had been done was truly wrong. And it just left a whole bunch of gaps. And the Holy Spirit said, he kept saying, wait, wait, wait. I ended up waiting 2.5 months. And thank God I did, because by that time I had cooled down. And then I knew that I could go in and I could just share, you know, why did you do this? And I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah. The night before I was to have this meeting, this is one of the most difficult things I've ever done in my life. A Holy Spirit said to me, and I want you to remember this, I want you to go in and apologize to that person. And then he downloaded the why behind that, because you had put her in a leadership role, even though she wanted it, that she was on the wrong seat of the bus. As simple as that, the wrong seat. So I went in and I asked for forgiveness. And you might be sitting here and saying, I bet she said, oh, that's okay. Oh, no. She said, thank you. Just think about that. Has that ever happened to you? When the Holy Spirit said, you know you've been wronged. I was wronged. But he said, you ask for forgiveness.
You see why I love her so much? Yes.
It's called, that's beautiful. It's called mercy.
Yes. It's called mercy. I learned so much.
She's so good. I think for me, probably the biggest thing is the Lord dealing with me personally about my own insecurities, my own need to please people, because for a lot of, and it's still this way, I shy away. Well, I'm either extreme. I either am going to go in like the Christy Kerr-shaped hole in the wall, I'm going to come at you. Or it's going to be, I'm just going to be like, I can't, I'm going to avoid conflict at all. And I finally realized, I'm afraid that if it goes south, they're going to say something to me. And I've had this happen, where they say something to me that I'm going to then take on. And I'm not going to be able to forget that they said that thing
take
to me.
Take on the offense.
Take on the offense. Yeah. Take on... you know, a judgment of like, you only care about yourself. You know, I've been in conversations where it goes south and it's like, well, you only care about yourself, or you're out to make a name for yourself, or you don't, you know, and some of those things that were said, I just remember being like, oh my gosh, this is so not who I am. But again, this is another conversation with my husband, because he was like, well, is it true? And I'm like, no. And he's like, well, then why are you listening to what they say? And I'm like, because it's said. Yeah. It was said. And now it's like in the room. And now I feel like I have to take it on. So the Lord really working on Christy, you have got to, and this is as I get older, the thing that God will not let go of, and the thing he continually points at me is, you have got to be secure in me. You have to be, when you're secure in me and who I've called you to be and what I've asked you to do, then if you have a confrontation with somebody and they say something that's terrible and hurtful, you can go, oh, wow, that stung. But is that true? No, it's not. Okay, so it's okay. Because I think I avoided a lot of difficult conversations because I had been deeply hurt in those moments. And then I thought, I can't handle it if they say something that is hard for me to hear, whether it's true or not. And I think it's wise to be able to go like, I also can handle being wrong, right? I can handle, yeah. I was wrong in that moment. I can handle both of those things. I can handle somebody saying something unkind, and I can handle if I have to admit I made a mistake. It doesn't change my identity. But those are two growth things that I think I've had to really lean into. I'm still obviously not perfect and learning a ton, but those are the places that I, if I was to put my finger on why it's so hard, it has to do with my own insecurities as a person.
That's good. I don't have much to add to that, except for, I guess the only thing I can sum it up as is, just looking at it and figuring out, is this really who I am? Mm-hmm. And not assuming that they're wrong. Because sometimes they're right. Yeah. And sometimes it's about sitting back, taking a step back and praying about it and saying, maybe their perception is their perception and they've seen some things that weren't the greatest, right? And sitting back and really thinking about it and not making an assumption and really praying about it and figuring out, is this an area or is this a small sample size? But is this really something? And then maybe it's a catalyst for growth. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell you how many times I've gotten into an argument and somebody has gotten passionate and they have revealed something to me. And I've been like, no, that's not me. And then I sit down and I think about it and I'm like, oh, Lord, hallelujah. Apparently I went to church and I didn't realize it with an argument, right? So really thinking about it and then praying about it. And if you really do have questions and you're like, hey, I really don't and I struggle with it, obviously prayer is your first piece of it. But I don't know about y'all, but sometimes when I get super passionate, I really struggle to hear God. I'm just going to be honest because I'm so passionate. My face is red. I can feel in my throat. It's just a situation, right? So I go to one of my girlfriends that I know is going to be super honest. And this, I don't tell them somebody said this. This is what I do. Can you tell me a time where you felt like I was short and rude? Oh, because guess what? They're not going to come to your defense and they're not going to say, hey, of course you're not. That person is so wrong.
So I sum it up as check yourself before you wreck yourself.
That's really good. And I feel like I'm just hearing this underline of humility.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, is having the humility to walk into these conversations and say, I know I'm not perfect, which also makes you help love them a little bit more, knowing that they're not perfect, but to still lead that conversation with this sense of they might say something that is true and I need to reflect on, or just having the humility to have them say mean things to you, storm out of the office and not run after them saying things back,
yeah.
But just saying, I am the leader in this role and I have to present that way. But do you feel like there is a difference in hard conversations between peers versus someone you're over in leadership? Talk on that. Dolores, you seem like you had a reaction. You go first.
Yeah, like a lot. So as sisters or as a friend or as a peer, right, you can go to them and you're like, hey, we both know what's going on. Let's just have a conversation. And then you can just level set and say, are we talking about your opportunities or my opportunities? Because the worst situation you want to be in is like the back and forth and just trying to sling mud. I know that we're in church, but let's just call a spade, right? Like, it's just what it is. No slinging mud. But when it's your direct report and it's your DR and they're sitting there and you have an obligation, God has given you the wonderful privilege of being a people leader. You've got to give the feedback because it is your job to coach, lead, and mentor regardless of the situation it is and how much you may or may not like that person or love that person in the moment. So you got to take control of the situation. And most of the time, it's about making sure that you're, in my experience, have been assertive enough to not let it go on the defensive and stay factual and making sure that they understand what the expectation is.
That's really good.
Yeah. I always lean the Brené Brown statement, clear is kind, of just, you just have to be really clear. Sometimes in church life, it's hard for us to, we're like, being direct seems to be something that, and Minnesotans, listen, we're terrible at this. We're like, I've told them exactly how I feel. Oh, how'd that conversation go? Oh, well, I hinted at it a lot. Or I sent him a box of candy. I'm sure they knew that I was sorry. I was like, but did you say the word sorry? Well, no, I just really, I've done everything I can. It's like, we're so bad at just really confronting things. And so I jumped off of the topic. But when dealing with people that are, I'm directly responsible for their work and their outcome, again, I always want to create a positive environment. And so I want to say, hey, I appreciate this and this and this that you do. Here are some areas that I think we want to grow in, or here's a challenge. And let's talk about what are some ways that this can grow. I think getting people talking about their, and sometimes you will, I never, when I was working at North Central, I never separated my pastor heart from my leader heart. So asking questions, and again, this might be different in the corporate world, but are you okay? Is there something going on? This is not your normal performance. Seems like this event happened and there were a few balls that got dropped. So that's so unlike you. Can you help me understand what was going on? Do you need more help? Are you overtaxed? And I've just found being very thoughtful about people's whole person, not just the job they do, goes a long way in church and in corporate, where you're just like, okay, so, and so then somebody will be like, oh my gosh, my baby hasn't been sleeping for weeks and I haven't slept. And like, okay, I'm really glad that we had a chance to talk. So how can I help you, meet expectations, or, do we need more help? Or, okay. Or sometimes it's just like, I totally get that that's hard. Like, how are you going to fix this now? Because this is your obligation. So I'm on board with you and I'm here to support you, but how are you going to rise up and honor this obligation? So to me, it's always going to come back to the person and trying to make sure that you see them as a person, not just a job.
Sometimes in the marketplace, it's one way, and Dolores would attest to this. In ministry, it's a little bit different. Sometimes we come with a soft, when really maybe what that person needs is some tough love. And in, like Christy said, in all just genuineness, honesty, truth.
I'm glad you brought it up, because that was one thing I definitely wanted to dive into today. Is I think there's the stereotype, opinion, idea that in corporate world and business, the hard conversations, they're direct, they're bold, you know, that's how it is. But then in church world, in ministry, in organizations where it's like bridging the gap, you know, nonprofit, it can be a little more fluffy when you're relaying hard conversations or sugar-coated or, you know, the idea of you can't be direct and mean because you have to have grace, where that doesn't make any sense. They can't, you know, can be direct and have grace. So I would love to hear your opinions on that. And if that's something you have experienced, and do you feel like that's a fair assumption, and just any thoughts you have about it?
Oh, the pressure. I'm just kidding. So I think that's a stereotype. I've seen a lot of corporate people struggle with feedback and having those direct conversations, but I've also seen a lot of pastors. That was the great thing about my dad. Never did counseling by himself. He always had one of us in the room with him because he was never alone with people. And I love that for his accountability, but that also means I got to learn a lot at a very young age. And understanding that you're right, in church, have I heard more stories about how people would give feedback in an email or a text message and set clear expectations because they weren't comfortable having the conversation? Or how do you combat the, well, I just don't feel like that's where God wanted me to do it, or I felt led to go over here and that's why I left that over there. That's a sticky conversation. The way that I look at it is, at the end of the day, God said, a worker man's worth his wages. So how are you fulfilling the position either you've dedicated yourself to or you're getting paid for? And then how are you making sure that as a leader, you're setting those people up for success? There's a lot of classes in corporate America, like Crucial Conversations. That is a great book. It's got a great layout. That is pretty much, I read that after I wrote my workshop for how to manage conflict. And I was like, oh my gosh, I think this person loves Jesus. This is great. And then I can go into corporate America and teach it and feel like, look at this. It's like Jesus, except for I just don't talk about it. So I would say that's a stereotype. Absolutely. Have I seen that? 100%. But I think it comes down to, if people are willing and they want to learn, then they'll go find the education.
It's interesting because I just had this conversation with my therapist, because I have one. It's no shame in it. And I was talking to him about, because I'm currently serving on a board in our community, and I had to have a couple really difficult conversations. I made the Rotary mad. Man, I made the Rotary mad. And so I had to pick up the phone, and I had to have a bunch of conversations with people in the community. And it was like, I didn't feel an ounce of nervousness. Like, I just felt like I didn't feel emotional about it. I felt like, hey, and we, you know, and they were like, how dare you? And I was just calm and whatever. But then if somebody from church were to call me and be like, we need to have a conversation, I would be like on the floor fetal, like, because they felt so different. And so I asked Dr. Tim, I said, why do those two things feel so different to me? Why does one, I feel capable, I trust my gut, I trust that I'm able to engage without all the emotion, I don't worry about like, am I going to cry? And then like, but this other side feels so different. Why is that? And he said something I thought was really interesting. He said, you know, a lot of people would say that the most intimate thing about a person is their sexuality. He said, I disagree. The most intimate thing about a person is their spirituality. It's the most vulnerable part of who you are. It is, and when we are in churches, as a member, as a leader, it is the biggest part of who you are. It's intimate. It's vulnerable. When we sit and talk about things in church, we're asking God to open up our hearts and pull out all these things. And it is, he's like, it is so intimate. And that is why when people say I have church hurt, it feels different than my job let me go. Mm. My church did something that hurt me, and I am just like, ugh, because it's the most intimate part of who we are. That's why I think those conversations feel different. It feels like to me that there's more attached. So if you challenge somebody on, hey, your attitude about this, or hey, you did this, or hey, or they come at you, you know, it's this more open and vulnerable part of who you are. And so I think that's maybe why it feels a little more heightened to me, and why, you know, when you're talking to a volunteer about like, hey, I need you to step up. You haven't been showing up for the nursery. And, you know, there's a lot more feelings involved because it's my church and I'm serving, and it's a part of how I'm walking out my faith with God. And again, it goes down from that what happened to emotion to identity. You didn't show up for your shift. If, you know, at work, it'd be like, oh, yeah, I didn't show up for my shift. But at church, it's connected to so many other pieces of am I being a good Christian?
Yeah.
And so that's why I think it's all maybe just connected in a deeper way. I don't have an answer for it.
I mean, that's beautiful.
In my opinion, it's really harder. Good. It feels like there's more feelings involved.
Yeah, really good. Any thoughts, Kara?
No, that sums it.
Yeah, that was good.
That's really good.
Really good, Christy.
It's Dr. Tim. It was his advice.
I like Dr. Tim.
I told him I was going to steal it.
but it is, it's just such a good example. And it's, I feel like I'm learning a lot right here too, because what a prime example of looking at like, this is why it hurts a little more, because I felt that, like I have felt that feedback coming from ministry. And sometimes even if it's good feedback, and that's just my own insecurity, but sometimes if there is cruelty or just someone being mean, you're like, ah, but you love Jesus.
Yeah.
And so that hurts a little bit more coming from you. Like there's just a little bit of a deeper sensitivity that
and
comes
it could
from
be
it.
More expectations. Like,
yeah.
I thought that I, you know, we talk about our church all the time as being a family, you know, like we care about each other. We love each other. We support each other. We walk through life together. Well, you know, I don't necessarily feel that with the guy in accounting, you know, of like, you're just family. And he's like, I don't even know your last name. Right. So sometimes it's not as close knit, you know, you put everybody in a church and it's almost more like a family conflict than it feels heightened to me.
Are you a single mom or know someone who is? As single parenting has a lot of unique challenges, we want to invite you to join us for the 2024 Single Moms Retreat, an overnight getaway to relax, be refreshed, and have fun. You'll be inspired by incredible speakers and powerful times of worship, and connect with other women who understand your story. Enjoy lots of free giveaways and activities such as the Diva Boutique, a spa, car care, professional haircuts and headshot photos, gifts, and more. The Single Moms Retreat is May 31st to June 1st at Lake Geneva Christian Center in Alexandria, Minnesota. This event is made possible by the generosity of individuals, churches, businesses, and volunteers. Would you consider supporting or serving with us? Register to attend, volunteer, exhibit, or donate by going to mnbtg.org/retreat. That's mnbtg.org/retreat. We'll see you there.
Well, I want to be able to hear some of your guys' questions. So if you did write questions, could you pass them to a side? What side, Natalie, would you? So Natalie's going to collect some questions. And if you want to just pass them down, we'll go through that. And Natalie and Allison, you guys can just put them right here on the table. But as they're collecting, I would love to hear if you have any other resources. Like that book was a great resource, Dolores. Anything else, blogs, podcasts, person to follow that has been really helpful in this topic for you guys?
I love some of Craig Rochelle's. Like, I love all of his stuff. Craig Rochelle. And I like Lisa Harper. And I like Rick Warren, some of their podcasts. And here's why. Because they weave life principles in there besides Jesus. And sometimes I just go, oh, this was so short, but it was so good.
I mentioned Brené Brown. I love her books. You know, it's not a faith-based, but I feel like she kind of digs into the like some of your motivations as to why you do some of the things that you do. So I really like her. And Crucial Conversations, I second that book. It actually has been a huge help in marriage in being able to communicate. Jeff and I read it together. We're like, because we speak very different languages, and it's very helpful. And then this new book, Difficult Conversations, that we just started, those would be some resources.
Yeah, the thing I love about Crucial Conversations is that chapter 5, if you read that and it does not change your life, you should read it again. Because it talks about how your brain is wired to fill in the blanks. God is so amazing and he has created us so wonderful and so intuitive, but sometimes it trips us up. So we take things from our past experiences and then we insert here. So it's all the entire chapter 5 talks about separating the truth and the facts from the stories we tell ourselves. Yes. And the devil loves those stories, y'all. I'm just going to be honest. He like relishes in that spot because he can create such conflict and such offense down in your heart. And then you can't receive anything else. I love the fact that it walks along the side of Matthew 18 and walks through the entire process. And the fact that it's just, they just weave so nicely together. And the fact that the thing I also like about the book is it's got practical application in it. So it's not just like hearing something, but the learning and development person inside of me is like, oh, there's action items. There's something to put into practice. There's something to make it live and that I can own it.
So good. All right. Well, we'll dive into some of these. And again, we might not be able to get to all of them, but we'll do our best. So this person is working in the marketplace and really struggling because coworkers seem to take joy in her mistakes and they gossip about it and joke about it. And she is just finding it obviously very hurtful, as most people would, and just needs ideas of how to manage this.
Man, that's tough. So I've been in that situation. I've been in that situation a little recently, actually, too. I just continue to ask for feedback, because if they don't have anything new to gossip about behind your back, then you walk with confidence. And as much as that is not great and it's not fun, and I didn't like it either, because then when I brought it up to HR, which you can always do, which is also part of a biblical standpoint of if you stand against your accused and they're having conversation and there's no way to reconcile what's going on, you bring it to HR and have a conversation. But then when HR asks you, your boss asks you, you can be like, I asked for feedback and there isn't anything being done. So then it's creating a toxic work environment. So don't just sit there and let it happen. Take activity, ask for the feedback, and then ask to move on. And if it doesn't, address it. Mm-hmm. Hold accountability.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Good. Thank you. So when you have someone on leadership who is not performing well and has been encouraged and told they need to step up, but how do you ask them to step down for a season or handle that if you feel that it is not a good fit for them actually in this season?
Mama Carol?
Oh boy. I'm going to process for a minute. How do you ask them to step down? My question would be, do they really need to step down? And I would say, how do you negotiate with that person so they would actually take the action step of stepping down? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
I've prayed a lot of people out. Jesus, just call them elsewhere. I've done that a couple times. And then I was like, oh, sorry. Oh, you can go to Bethel's Rock. It's fine. No, I'm just kidding. I will also say this. There is another Brené Brown thing. She says you can choose, what is it? Oh, choose discomfort now or resentment later. So you're choosing your discomfort, right? You're either going to have a difficult conversation right now, like, and again, in love, like, hey, you know what? I appreciate that you have been, you know, I'm in volunteer world for the most part. So she's like, I would not be like, thank you for trying. She would be like, you're not doing your job. But a lot of times you're dealing with volunteers and they're not getting paid. And so it's a
tricky situation.
It's tricky because you're like, you are not, you know, for your volunteer job that you get no money for and I need all your time. I need you to step up. Like that's a tricky conversation. But I think a lot of times it's just, again, asking questions like, hey, I know that you were willing to do this, but let's talk about, it seems like maybe this is maybe too much for your plate right now, or how are you doing? The reason it says choose discomfort now or resentment later is because, you know, a lot of times we're just like, okay, well, you know, let me know if you need anything. And then you go home and you're stewing like, they're never showing up. I'm going to have to go and fill these gaps. Like, and so it's going to be uncomfortable either one. Brené Brown says, choose your discomfort. You're either going to have a hard conversation right now of like, this just might not be working out right now. Or the resentment that you're going to feel afterwards. So you're just like, pick your poison. It's now or later. So that
and
helps
maybe
me.
This person just needs to be in a different role. And maybe that's not where he or she, where the, her gifts are. Mm-hmm. And that's a miserable step to be in as a place to be in as a volunteer.
I'm going to out you a little bit. So like 4 years ago, I was doing the girlfriend party and I said something and I was like, don't tell anybody, but you can't fire volunteers. So this is what we're going. And Carol was standing like right there. I didn't think she was in the room. I'm just going to be real honest, but I probably would have said it still anyways. And I got down off the stage and we were talking and joking or whatever. And she's like, you can fire volunteers. And I have, sorry, I'm outing you just a little bit. So here's what I do. It's the pre-work. Like you have to do the pre-work before you have this conversation. You just don't make this decision. You're like, oh, all these feelings, they're not doing well. Did you give them good direction?
Yep.
Did you set the expectation?
Yep.
Have you educated them and helped them understand how to do it?
Yep.
Do they have the opportunity and the competency to do it? And if those are all, you've gone through that and you're checking yourself as a leader and you're like,
really good.
Then you say, I'm sorry, but we're going to have this conversation, right? And as a leader and as somebody who's got to uphold that standard, that is your responsibility and that's your job, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it. So making sure that you're checking yourself beforehand, if you do the proper work beforehand and you're being honest about how you're coaching them, developing and having the conversations, I'm not going to say this decision is fun, but doing what's right is easy.
Yes.
And what you know that is the right thing to do. It's not a difficult decision. Doing it is hard. Having the compassion to say this is what needs to be done, but making the decision of what needs to be done is easy.
I hear two words coming out of your mouth. I hear truth and compassion.
And I kind of want to take that question another direction too, because this just came to my mind. So maybe somebody in here needs to hear it. There are going to be situations in your life where you have a leader above you that you know isn't supposed to be in that role. You know that this might be the season that they're supposed to step down, but they're refusing to step down because they don't want to give it up. And they're having words spoken over them like, no, you're doing great. Just power through. But you in your spirit know like this isn't right for them. You might have to check your role in the sense of, should I still be here then if this environment is no longer what I think it should be? Mm-hmm. And because there's been roles I've been in where I have felt that, and I, instead of focusing so much on them, they shouldn't be in this role, they shouldn't be in this role, the Lord has told me, well, maybe it's time for you to step out of your role and to go somewhere else. So I just felt like that I needed to say that, because I think sometimes we hyper focus on leaders above us, but we forget like you might be done in your season too, if it's not going well. So the next question. So what do you do if a person you are confronting, they're not willing to have that back and forth conversation and they're just denying all responsibility completely?
You're not responsible for their conversation, their end result. I mean, if you've spoken in love and truth and prayed your way through it and gone through your list, the Dolores list, how about we call it that?
I'm going to call it that from now on.
I like that. I want that list. But I think if you've done all you can do and they choose to walk away from it and you know, then you can't do anything else.
Scripture tells us, as much as is concerned with you, live at peace with everybody. And I have to hold on to that sometimes because I think, no, I'm going to make you like me. I'm going to fix this. And at some point you have to go, as much as it concerns me, live at peace. I can only do what I can do, have a conversation, try and clear the air, try and live at peace, try and have a good attitude towards somebody. And at some point you have to just let it sit, which sometimes drives some of us crazy. And the idea that there are people out in the world that I know, you know, don't like me is really, really hard. But I can go to sleep at night knowing that I've done everything in my power to mend relationships, to be kind, you know, and that's included sending letters to people after conflict of like, hey, I know we're not, you don't want to be my friend. I know you didn't like how that went down. I just want you to know the door is always open. I always care about you. And then you just have to leave it and sit. And that can be really, really challenging, because sometimes some of us just keep banging on that door and And like, you know, Carol said, the Holy Spirit, you just wait a while. I had a broken relationship with a friend over a church hurt situation. And I kept trying to bang the door. Like, can we just sit down and talk? Can we have this conversation? Can we have, finally she just said, I need you to not contact me. I don't want to talk to you. And she was one of my best friends, and it just killed me. But you know what I did? I got a little Bible verse. Faith is the substance of what we hope for, the evidence of what we cannot see. And I put it in my windowsill, and I prayed every day for reconciliation with this friend when it seemed like there was nothing in sight. And it was probably 5 years later that I got a message from her. I'm ready to talk.
5 years.
5 years. I still prayed, and we had the conversation 5 years later. And when we finally sat down to talk, she said, I woke up this morning. She said, I was getting ready to go to a Bible study, and it was on forgiveness. And the Lord said, you cannot go to this Bible study until you call Christy and have this conversation. So I had to trust the Holy Spirit, and it was killing me. I was like, well, maybe I'll just keep sending cards and da-da-da. But I had to just like sit back and trust the Lord that he was going to work things out in his own time. And that relationship has been restored. And it's one of the most beautiful things in my life because God did that. And I know God did that. I could not do that in my own strength, but I just had to wait and trust God to work it out in his time.
But that's really hard.
Yeah. So the thread I hear you ladies talking about is pretty much summing it up and letting God be God.
Yeah.
Has anybody else struggled with that? Like, no,
so
look at all these ladies.
It, right?
There's only three hands. I only had three hands up.
I think
oh,
I'd be so
heavens
good.
To Betsy. Look at that. Yeah, it's hard to let God be God. That obviously can't be the case when you're a people leader and it's underneath you, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have to address it, but yeah.
So what do you do if you are having to give difficult feedback and conversation to someone who is always offended? And it's you have to give them this feedback, but I'm going to ad lib here on whoever's question this was. But let's say it's not fireable what they're doing. I mean, it's just not necessarily like super wrong, but they're always offended whenever you have to give them feedback. And I'm sure that's exhausting. How do you maybe mentally prepare for it? What strategies do you use to like, I still have to get this to you, this message, and work with you tomorrow. And I know it might keep happening, but what do you do in that situation?
So I just hired a brand new team member on my team. And to be honest, that's something that we struggled with. She came from a very different environment. She came from the school district and now she's not in the school district. And so on my team, every time I went to give her feedback or even the fact that I had a form to fill out while I was observing her, because feedback is a gift, she started to cry. And she was so upset. And I was like, what is going on? Because it's a different culture, right? So just really struggled with the feedback. And what we came to is just having a conversation and trying to understand where it's coming from. And I'm not saying that you need to balance and be their counselor by any means, but understanding where her trauma was and understanding what environment feedback was used previously. Like, feedback shouldn't be in a spot where you're trying to condemn somebody, shame somebody, or bring them down, right? It's motivating. So as soon as she realized that I was her biggest fan and I was her raving fan and I'm here to help her, support her, lead her, and I want to make her the best she possibly can be. And I'm like, I want you to be better than me when I get up and speak. Yes. And she was like, oh, okay. So now that we give the feedback, right? Now she's like, how else can I do this differently? How else can I do this differently? Don't get me wrong. There just last week, she was like, oh, Dolores, I can't handle this. Like, just give me the answer. And I was like, nope, sorry. What do you think you should do? What's going on, right? So I think in some of those cases, what's worked well for me is building the relationship and trying to understand how they receive and where they're coming from. Because it's not about you. It's about them. Because if you think about it, you've got the easier seat out of the two. You're prepared. They're the ones that have to receive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that comes out of relationship. Again, you know, I want to be someone that grows leaders. And sometimes people come to you they've never been a leader before, or they've never been in a leadership feedback, or they've never been in that situation before. And you kind of have to understand, again, a lot of times in the church world, I can see the potential in somebody. I can see, you know, God working, and I want to come alongside and help them grow. And so sometimes it is very tedious. You know, it's not like I hired somebody with the skill. It's like, I see this in you and I'm excited to walk alongside of you. And so let me help you grow. Again, it comes back to that relationship, because then it's like, okay, let's talk about how that ran. What did you do that you thought was great? Or could you see how maybe that was taken the wrong way by somebody? And, you know, and some people I know, it's like, they're like, I know I'm crying. I'm sorry. I know. And I'm like, it's okay. Like, I know you're going to get there. It's okay. But I think that's a part. And that's just a personal thing of mine. This is a part of who I want to be as a person. I want to be replicating leaders behind me. I want people that I'm raising up all the time. And so sometimes you have to help people move past that because they've never been challenged in that area before. And so I just think that's an important part of, if you want to be somebody that's developing leaders, you have to learn to be able to embrace, you know, sometimes their big feelings about
idiosyncrasies.
Things. Yeah. What'd you say?
Idiosyncrasies.
Yes. Right. And help them move past that. Like, and so I think that's just a big part of,
you know, I so learning. Agree with you, Christy. You know, my two passions in my world, as I shared in the last class, are mentoring and leadership development. And that has always been my heartbeat, just like exactly what you're saying. How do we grow leaders? It's not about me. It's not about us. It's about, how do we grow the next generation or two generations of leaders? How do we really grow them?
Yeah.
And the number one thing, it is about relationship, as Christy said, but it's about loving Jesus and loving people. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the bottom line. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have one more question that I'm really excited about, because I'm really happy this person asked this, because it's something I've thought of and have seen other people struggle with. Do you warn people of others? And I want you to start with this, Carol, as someone who has, you have hired, I'll give an example. So you have a lot of speakers, you have a lot of volunteers, you've had a lot of workshop speakers, you know, Thrive big speakers come in. And what if you're like, that was not a good character, like that, I didn't see good character, or it just didn't go well. And someone asks you, hey, I saw you hired so-and-so to do this. What did you think? Do you warn them? But where's your line in, I don't know. Yeah. So, and even just as in the corporate role, let's say somebody asks for a reference, do you warn them? So I would love for you to start, Carol.
I'm very interested to see what these two ladies say about this. Okay.
You go.
No, I don't have an answer.
You're going first.
I'm just asking you guys. I will be like, I don't know.
It's hard. It's really hard.
Okay.
Just say
I would really walk carefully on that one.
Yeah.
Because I keep going back to this, and I feel like a broken record. Prayer.
Yeah.
It goes back to prayer. And I do. I feel like a broken record. But, you know, there will be situations that you do have to warn somebody. But I remember, this is just a couple, 3 years ago, I got a call from Arizona about a particular speaker. And I just walked. I felt like, okay, I'm going to walk on eggshells, and that's okay. But I'm going to give her all the positives I can possibly give her. But then I'm going to tell her why I might not choose to have her back. And I said, here's the bottom line. She didn't fit in our culture. She didn't fit in what I really needed and what I expected. Does that make sense? And that was not in a volunteer role, but that was in a speaker role.
Hired role.
A hired role. And I couldn't justify ever bringing her back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so
Yeah, so I absolutely 100%. I try to keep it clear and crisp and not muddy the water. So an example of this is like 3 weeks ago, somebody asked me about one of my team members that I have, and I was honest and I said, they're really good at XYZ. Here are the areas that we're working on, or here are the areas where like sometimes it's a little bit to adapt, right? They're very structured. When you go out of structure, they struggle with it. This is how I would recommend this person. So let's talk about me as an example, right? So if somebody would be like, hey, Dolores, well, how do you think about Dolores as a speaker? I'd be like, well, she's great at engagement. She loves people. She enjoys it. She's a little needy. She needs hot water before she has her tea before she goes out and speaks because her throat gets a little dry, right? So those are facts. That's the thing about it. I never feel bad for being honest about facts, because if Carol or Angie or anybody asks me to come and speak, I'm going to ask for hot water because my throat is going to get sore. Mm-hmm. And that's honesty, and I know where I'm at, and I know who I am. So I just try to keep it short, sweet, and to the point.
And I will say this, and this is another thing that I learned from Carol. I worked with her a number of years, and one day I realized I've never heard her speak ill of anyone. Mm-hmm. You know, in leadership positions, she's like, maybe I have. Not to me. And honestly, and I'm saying that to say, She's been honest about like, hey, I want you to oversee these volunteers. You might have a challenge in this area and speaking facts.
That's my favorite word. Challenge.
It might be a challenge.
Particular.
This might be an obstacle. But she never is like, can you believe that person is like that?
It's the gossip.
It's that they did it again. Or in the back, you know, afterwards, and somebody says something and she walks over like, oh, can you believe that? She gives so much dignity to people that you are honest with people, you know, because we all have shortcomings, very honest with that, but always with dignity and always with respect and always honoring their personhood. And so it's something that I was like, man, I want to be that kind of leader that is very careful in choosing. Now, I just love corporate America. There's just less feelings just to be able to give.
I mean, a lot more politics.
Yeah. True.
It's true. It's just if you're going to play them or not. And I
keep imagining like sitting down with my volunteers. Here's the five things you're doing great. Here are the five things that you can grow in. And imagine them looking at me going, really? Like, okay, I'm sorry. So, I mean, again, it's different worlds where you have to navigate it differently. But I love the direct, and I love stick to facts. And then I always want to make sure that people know if I'm challenging them on something that they can be confident that I'm not around the corner talking to their coworker about like, oh my gosh, they did it again. I'm so frustrated.
I think a misleading thing is that we think that everybody should be a good fit for everything. Mm-hmm. Are you a good fit for everything? Are you? I'm not. Absolutely not. So I think that's the mindset that I have, is not everybody's going to be a good fit for everything, and that's okay. And I'm okay with that. And so just making sure that there's unity with that.
Yeah.
But you know, here's the bottom line. I think Jesus came to serve, and the leadership that we need to develop is servant leadership, servanthood leadership, because then you can, then you don't have to be right. You don't have to always be right, but you can proceed ahead, and you can just look at things from the eyes, or attempt to look at them through the eyes of Jesus.
Yeah. So good. Yes. So you can warn, you can have a discussion, but not gossip. That was the
thing.
And
where is that line?
Yeah.
There's a fine line there where you cross from healthy discussion to gossip.
Yes. That'll be for next year session. We'll start right back up from there.
Well, let's give these wonderful ladies a round of applause.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Bridging the Gap podcast. We are honored to hear the live panel recording on navigating difficult workplace conversations and providing feedback. Join us for next year's BTG Leadership Conference, where you can hear more workshops like this one. This will take place February 21st and 22nd in Alexandria, Minnesota. Learn more and secure your housing at mnbtg.org/leadership. You can also learn more about Bridging the Gap at mnbtg.org by downloading the Bridging the Gap app through your app store. store and by following MNBTG on social media. We also invite you to take a moment to rate and review this podcast to help others find this resource as well. Thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to being with you next time on the Bridging the Gap podcast.